Accession number 28645, reel 10.
So we're back to Egypt, well, and I'd said some things about Egypt that it was.
You hadn't really. We haven't.
That the
really
families amused themselves. Yes,
we haven't really arrived in Egypt. We left it that you were in Venice on the boat.
Yes, and I said something on that about the families amusing themselves.
Yes.
But we did. We had a very good time. Very pleasant. We've been there, I've been there a little while. And my father decided it would be a good thing to have a horse. So we went off up to Cairo, and they used to sell off the racing horses who weren't quite fast enough. And we went with another person, another employee of the canal company, who knew all about riding, and he had a roving eye as well, and he took us up to Cairo, and I fell in love with a horse there called Shalabaz, which means acrobat. It was an exquisite horse, but he wouldn't let me have it. He said it was too unruly. So I got another horse, which was called Grazal of Gabulani, which means the antelope who goes anywhere. He did too. He was lovely. So we bought these two horses and brought them back. And I didn't like the way he treated Shalabaz. He wore spurs, and I didn't approve of that at all. However, there it was. A lovely horse. But mine was a dear horse, and he was very full of character. He disliked motorcycles to a degree. He went absolutely mad if a motorcycle went past. He was extremely interested in cars, and any parked car with an open window was fair game. He'd go and inspect the inside of it. He certainly had in him somewhere a gift for dancing. He could have been a circus horse. Because one day I was out riding, and the military was doing a march with band. And they appeared round the corner, and my horse started to dance on the tips of his hooves, and it was extremely uncomfortable. Well, I thought he was going to jerk me off. However, I managed to cling on, and the band got nearer and nearer, and he danced more and more on the spot. He didn't go anywhere. He danced on the spot. And then the sergeant major at the head of this business saw what was happening, and he turned round and yelled at the top of his voice, "Stop the bloody band!" Oh, dear. So there was dead silence, and my horse stopped dancing, but it was fascinating. He really was dancing on the tips of his hooves. He never did it again, because I never gave him another band to do it to. And, of course, he was a racehorse. He was trained as a racehorse. So if he saw a straight path in front of him, he was away. But he was full of, and he loved to roll. There was a stretch of grass that was on an island promontory that I was allowed to go there because of my husband's position, but nobody else was. And I used to go riding there. And then I'd suddenly feel a slight pull on the reins to one side, and I knew my horse was going to roll, and I'd better get off quickly. He'd have a lovely roll, and he'd stand perfectly quiet while I got on again. He was full of character, that horse. And then he kept on, he was very nervous about being sure that I was there. And every now and again he'd stop and he'd turn his head round and snuffle at my feet to make sure I was still up there. And once in the desert, he got away. And he was galloping, and I've been told if you want to stop a horse galloping, you take him in a tight circle. So I took him in a tight circle. The only trouble was I took him in too tight a circle, and it threw me off, of course. He didn't throw me off, but the tightness of the circle threw me off. So he galloped away a few yards, and then he stopped. Then he came back, and he was upset. He snuffled at me and pushed me back to make sure I was alive. He was an extraordinary horse. Extraordinary. I was alive, but I never had the same jaw since. Broke my jaw. Oh dear. But he was a lovely animal. He really was. I was very sad to part with him.
And you parted with him because?
Because we left Egypt.
Oh, I see. That would be some years later.
Yes.
So you had him many years, in fact?
Yes, all the time I was there, from the time we went in 37 to 50. 52, yeah.
Which would have been most of his life.
Yes, I'm very much afraid he'd be sold as a Gary horse after we left. I don't know. There was no way we could take him with us, not in the situation as it was at that time. It was all we could do to get away ourselves.
Well, we'll come to all that.
Yes, we'll come to all that.
Can I just ask you this? You're 22 now.
My 21st birthday I spent in St. Wolfgang.
In where?
At the White Horse Inn.
Ah.
I've got a picture of that, of me with the cake they gave me. I was brown as a berry.
Well, I'd like to see that if it's
It's somewhere.
Okay. Well, we'll hunt it out at some later point.
Yes.
The question I wanted to ask was, you're 22 now, which is an age at which young women in those days did think about getting married.
Oh, yes,
not
yes.
Not that they would do it today so much, but they did in those days, I think. Had your father said anything along those lines?
Oh, yes, my father said.
Along those lines.
And I think it had a definite influence on my actions, probably, unconsciously. My father said, I am willing to support you until you are 25, and if you aren't married by then, I'm going to throw you out. Or words to that effect. I don't think he would have done, but he was very serious about it, and I took it very seriously. And I wouldn't say that's why I got married to my husband, but I'm sure it was at the back of my mind all the time, this uncertainty of the future, and the feeling I'd got to do something that made my future certain because of what my father had said. He may not have meant it, but on the other hand, he may. He seemed to be perfectly serious at the time. I had every right to throw me out at 25. But not so much in those days as now. I mean, now you're expected to learn to do something and get a job when you're about 17 or 18. You weren't then at all. There were lots of spinster daughters.
Had it crossed your mind that you might find an occupation or a career for yourself in lieu, either in addition to or in lieu of a husband, irrespective of the 25-year deadline?
No, it hadn't, because I've always said that I have not lived my life. My life has lived me. Everything seems to have happened, and I've always let it happen. And there was no reason. I was looking after my father. My mother liked to have me as a companion for traveling. She didn't want to travel by herself. She wanted me to be there. So that my time was fully occupied. I started work when I came back from Egypt during the war, because I took over all the housekeeping when my mother was working in the shop. But I was occupied the whole time. Nobody else was, you was getting a job. All the other daughters were doing the same sort of thing as I was. We had one or two daughters in our company, and I was very friendly with a, an Egyptian doctor in Ismailia, and he had married a Scots girl whom he treated very badly. That was another tale, very sad, tragic. And they had a daughter and a son who was a pig, treated his mother terribly. It was a tragic business altogether. But anyhow, not at that time. That was the beginning, and I was very friendly with the daughter. She was a lovely girl. We had a fancy dress ball once, and she dressed up with Nefertiti's headdress, and she looked marvellous. She looked absolutely right. Lovely sight. She was very good looking and a very charming person. We used to ride together. We used to ride out through the fields, through the agriculture, and go and look at the kingfishers. Yeah, lovely kingfishers. All the irrigation canals, which were not very wide, about 8 to 10 feet. They used to run straight through the fields. And there are all sorts of pretty things. There were water hyacinths and fields of peanuts. They have such pretty flowers, peanuts. I really must plant one day. Pale pink pea flowers. Lovely. And the water hyacinths were mauve blue. And everybody cursed them because they filled up the canals. And there were blue lotus too in the ditches. I've never seen them anywhere else. They were blue. They were not mauve, they were blue. Small lotus flowers. Why I didn't paint them, God knows. It's busy dancing. So, and then of course there was dancing several nights a week in at the French club. And we had a lot of dances anyway. And all that went on happily with breaks in Europe. Until 1939, my father met us. Oh, wait a minute, no, it would be 36. 36, Formula One, Round the Houses, as it was called then. The Round the Houses race in Monte Carlo. 32.
You've now gone back 7 years.
I have. I've jumped back, haven't I? What reminded me of it?
Something your father did.
That's right. Because we did Greece. But fairly widespread apart. 32. We did Monte Carlo. Oh, and my mother decided that it was absolutely essential that I should go and watch people gambling, so she took us to the casino. One woman with a 15, 16-year-old daughter. We rather stood out. There weren't many of them in the casino. And the other evenings we spent at the opera and the ballet. The Monte Carlo Ballet, which was so famous. And from there,
we're now going back to Egypt.
We are we? Oh, right. Egypt, yes. So we used to ride together, Ida and I. And that was lovely, and we played tennis, and we did all the usual sorts of things that colonial people do. A lot of dancing and cocktail parties and all that sort of thing. The military was at hand. There was the Air Force station where my father worked, and there was an army station. And further down the canal there was a naval station. So there was lots going on. And my father decided to play polo, for which he took my horse, which made me very nervous because I was afraid it would get hit. And that was how I met my husband, because he played polo too. They were both invited to play with the army. And Ida and I used to ride up to the camp, which was quite a long way, it was quite a long ride. We'd ride up and watch them playing polo. And how I first spoke to my husband, I haven't the faintest idea. I expect my father introduced him.
What did your husband's name first?
Luca.
Sorry?
Luca.
Luca.
Same as me.
And what was his job in the army?
My husband was in the canal company.
No, your husband was in the canal company. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Yes, he was in charge of the navigation. He was second in command of the navigation when I met him. And then he was first in command when we went back after the war. And before then, because the first in command died. So he took over. When did he take over? I think it was just before we left for England, but he was very busy with the Free French as well, because he was the head of the Free French in Egypt. He was the first one to join General de Gaulle in Egypt, and he was in charge of all the military, Free French military.
Can you describe your husband for me at that time?
Describe him? Well, you've seen a photograph of him.
Yes, but this tape cannot look at the photograph. This tape cannot look at the photograph, so can you describe for the tape?
Well, you can't describe what a person looks like. He had lots of lovely silver hair. He was tall. He was, in his way, a very presentable person. But his character was the main thing about him. He was completely honest person, very far-seeing. He worked for 10 years trying to make the French government and the British government see sense and make the canal into a free zone, international zone. They wouldn't listen. They said, oh no, we can't do that because we'd have to have Russia in. Well, they got jolly well more than Russia. And also there would have been no Israeli wars, no Egypto-Israeli wars. They wouldn't have existed because there'd have been the canal in between. But they wouldn't listen. They never do. When was Eden? Was it after? Was Eden
yes.
After the war?
1956, it was.
Yes, he was after the war, wasn't he?
How old was your husband when you met him?
Let's see now. He was 50. I think he was 26 years older than I was. Something like that.
What did you think of that?
He was very, very athletic. He's a completely honest person. Absolutely honest.
And the age difference didn't worry you?
No, it didn't. He's very active.
And what did your father think about the age difference? And your mother?
Oh, they wrote me long letters of warnings and, oh dear. Yes, it was terrible. dreadful business. They warned me about this and they warned me about that. I took no notice, of course. I didn't see what else I was going to do. My mother had got her shop, so she was settled. My father was settled. I was settled with Louis as far as that was concerned. We were engaged. I didn't see really. As I say, my life has lived me. It just happened. Most things just happened as far as I was concerned.
How long did it take you to get engaged after you first met him at the polo match?
Oh, heavens. I can't remember. No idea. It was at a dance, probably 39. Winter of 38, 39. It was at a big dance at the chief engineer's house. But the exact date, I really can't remember. But it was before one of my European visits. I'm not sure it wasn't when the troubles were beginning. No, I'd have to search in my memory, I really don't know. But it was just before I took off for one of my European visits. That's right. Probably 38. Probably 38, because he came